Good morning. May it please the court. Sarah O'Dea for appellants Tetra Tech, Inc. and Tetra Tech EC, Inc. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. So this case turns on one question. Did AIG conclusively establish that the underlying lawsuits could not result in covered liability? The answer is no. The question at the duty to defend stage is not whether the plaintiffs allege intentional conduct or even whether those allegations predominate. They clearly do. The question is instead is whether any potential for covered liability exists. As the California Supreme Court in Gray instructs, we must not examine only the pleaded word, but the potential liability created by the suit.
Let me ask you there, because no question that the insured, all they have to do is establish the potential. So what is it that shows the potential based upon the pleadings other than the word negligence?
Yes, that's a great question. So at the core of all of these complaints, what the plaintiffs are really alleging is that Tetra Tech mishandled contaminated soil.
Where is that in any of the pleadings, documents?
Mishandled.
Yes. And I know your position is that there's a lot of dramatic statements about fraud and this and that. So tremendous amount of that. But let's have you point me to the specific words that show the potential.
So, for example, in JAR, the government complaint, at paragraph 171, it alleges that Tetra Tech used soil as fill on the site that was, quote, either mislabeled, untested, or inaccurately.
Which complaint are you reading from now?
The second amended complaint in JAR. Paragraph 73 says...
I'm sorry, you said paragraph 171?
Yes, I just read from 171, yes. It says, Tetra Tech was permitted to use clean samples as fill on the site, but the soil Tetra Tech identified as clean included some soil that was either mislabeled, untested, or inaccurately
tested. I mean, that's wherever it is, 175, 176. How about paragraph 1, right? Paragraph 1 alleges that Tetra Tech fabricated its work and falsified the data that the Department of Navy relied on. I mean, that's the difficulty with this, is that you can look at the complaint and say, oh, well, this kind of sounds like maybe it's negligent. But then the whole gravamen of these allegations are very well-known allegations in this area are that your client knowingly falsified the remediation data.
Yeah, we don't dispute that the plaintiffs are alleging fraud, but that's not the question at the duty to defend stage. The question is there a path to liability in these cases for covered damages, damages covered under the policy, which are pollution conditions caused by Tetra Tech's operations that were unintended and unexpected from Tetra Tech's standpoint?
So I take it from your argument that just the words that it was potential is enough, and our court needs to ignore the actual factual allegations, because certainly if that was the separate, independent allegation, lawsuit, I think you'd have a very good argument that there was coverage, but The facts.
We're not asking you. First of all, these are not facts. These are allegations. These are unproven and disputed allegations. I think the Gray California Supreme Court decision is instructive. Gray stands for the proposition that you do not just look at the pleaded word. You can't construct a formal fortress around the pleadings and retreat behind them.
I agree with that, but I think there's no question that you're right about that. But in that case, it would seem that you're really arguing that the insurance company needs to come forward and use the word convincingly establish that there is no coverage. But the potential of coverage has to take into account everything that's set forth in all of the pleadings. Am I right?
It does, but all we have to show, it's a very low standard. That's why the duty to defend is broader than the duty to indemnify. At the end of the day, there may not be coverage. There may not be a covered judgment, but that doesn't change the fact that AIG has to defend when...
What is the potential for coverage that's set forth in the allegations in the complaint or any, let's say, supplemental to those allegations in the second amended complaint that indicates that, you know, the insurance company, AIG, really has a duty to defend. So the potential, do you agree with me the potential has to be in the complaint itself and that the insurance company has to look at the allegations to determine what that potential is, or... Maybe there's extrinsic evidence that there's an entirely different cause of action on merely just a mistake, the negligence you're talking about. But I don't see that in any of the complaints.
So it's not necessarily what comes from the complaint. If you read Gray, the allegations there were that the insured willfully, maliciously, brutally, and intentionally assaulted the defendant. And the California Supreme Court said even though the complaint itself, not any extrinsic evidence, clearly presented the possibility that the third party may obtain damages that were covered by the policy. And they based that on the fact, here's what the Supreme Court said in Jay. Despite Jones's pleading of intentional and willful conduct, he could have amended his complaint to allege merely negligent conduct, or the plaintiff may have been able to show that in physically defending himself, he was acting in self-defense and not intentionally. So in Gray, the complaint didn't even allege negligence. Here, all of the causes of action sound in negligence. At the end of the day, none of these plaintiffs have to prove fraud in order to recover. This is a pollution liability policy. It covers bodily injury, environmental damages caused by causing pollution conditions that arise out of Tetra Tech's covered operations. That's exactly the kind of harm that these plaintiffs are seeking. They can recover without showing that the pollution conditions were intentional or expected from Tetra Tech.
And yeah, your argument is that once the burden shifts, that there has to be conclusive evidence, and almost like, you know, it has to be almost a preponderance of evidence that there is no coverage once there's potential.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly right. The burden for the insurance company is very high. They have to conclusively establish no potential outcome here.
Okay. But what facts are they looking at to show that there is no, that they haven't met the standard of conclusive evidence that there is no coverage? And I'm looking at the facts. I don't know that anything was offered. And I know your argument is that the insurance company has claimed that the Gray case and all the cases that follow it that explain them seems to argue that there has to be extrinsic evidence. I'm not quite sure that that's what the insurance company is saying, but I'm really having trouble understanding how the insurance company can meet the conclusively understands or proves that there is no coverage when they don't have the facts to show that.
That's exactly right, based on the allegations. Let's be clear, there are no facts here. These are allegations. These are disputed allegations. Based on these allegations in the complaint, which is all we have here, they won't be able to conclusively establish that there's no potential pathway
to coverage. Where in the complaint, where is it as a matter of law for us to say, well, they met the burden?
The burden?
And I agree with you. The complaints are written in a way that show dramatic, intentional conduct, fraud, all of that. And you disagree with that. But where is the extrinsic evidence to show, or something, doesn't have to be extrinsic evidence, that that's false? I mean, you can't just deny it. Mm-hmm. There has to be something there. So can you point to where we can find that?
That's not the California standard for the duty to defend. The standard for the duty to defend, as stated in Gray, is whether the potential liability
but
the, created there,
I'm
by
stopping,
the...
I'm mm-hmm. stopping at potential. Because mm-hmm. otherwise, any allegations, unless frivolous, unless as a matter of law the court says that's frivolous, it seems to me it's your position that allegations that could fall within the parameters of the insurance policy, and we look at the insurance policy and we try to see if, or the insurance company, is there any possibility? There's always a possibility, isn't there? Unless it's frivolous. I think that's what you're arguing.
There's not always a possibility. You have to look at the insuring agreement. What do these policies insure? They insure bodily injury, environmental damage caused by pollution conditions arising out of Tetra Tech's covered operations. And those pollution conditions must be unexpected and unintended from the standpoint of the insured. That's what this policy insures. The question is there a potential that these three lawsuits could result in that liability?
Give me the facts that show potential.
There are no facts here. There are allegations. I can read to you the allegations.
Let's go to the allegation. I know there's the negligence allegation, but I'm going to let you tell me why the negligence allegation somehow establishes potential.
Sure. So I think what you may be getting at is this concept of inseparably intertwined that AIG mentions in its brief. And that's when AIG says, you know, negligence here, it's just labels, but all of Tetra Tech's conduct is inseparably intertwined with excluded fraud. So first, that's not California's duty to defend standard. There's no inseparably intertwined exception.
Unless it's in the complaint itself, right? You can find that. Can you tell me why it's not inseparably intertwined based upon the allegations?
Sure.
So that it just, this particular complaint, this claim, just stands apart from everything else because the facts show not fraud, they show negligence. Where is that?
Right. So I'll give you an example. Here's a case that AIG cited for that inseparably intertwined concept. It's Jane D. versus Ordinary Mutual Insurance Company. So that's a sexual assault case against a priest. The complaint had a claim for negligence, but the court said that any negligent conduct there, it has no independent wrongful character aside from excluded sexual acts. So that's an example of inseparably intertwined. Here, this case is different. The acts alleged by the plaintiffs here, essentially mishandling contaminated soils, those acts in and of themselves, they're not inseparably intertwined with fraud or intentional harm because they're independently actionable.
So what you're saying is, yes, I would agree with you if that's all they said. Maybe on the face of that, it would establish negligence. But the facts show more than that.
Again, there are no established facts. These are allegations.
I'm sorry. But you look at what what's alleged, which are facts, or they better be facts, that are alleged. And I don't see the separation there. Because you look at what do they mean by the conduct that you're alleging, which is narrow, which is negligence. Where is that? How do we separate that out from all the facts that are dramatic and fraud, which is more serious than negligence, obviously?
Yeah, so at the heart, they're alleging Tetra Tech mishandled contaminated soil. That action is separately actionable without being fraudulent or intentional. The fact that they label it fraudulent or intentional.
Merely because they allege that's enough for potential, and then they have to come back, the insurance company has to come back and show conclusively that there is no coverage. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Just the allegation itself, which is an alternative to fraud. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. That's exactly the duty to defend standard under California law. That's why it is said in every California duty to defend case, the duty to defend is broader than the duty to indemnify. And the California courts say you may have to defend a claim where ultimately there isn't coverage, but you don't know that at the pleading stage. That's why the insurance company has to be able to call on its insurance company to defend it in a claim that alleges potentially the kinds of risk that are covered by this policy that you bought to protect you from pollution.
Okay, so you're saying essentially on the second claim, on the allegation that there, it was just kind of what they did is negligence, and they didn't do what they're supposed to do with these very with the products itself and the potential drop damage to those products. Are you saying that the insurance company, because you allege that alone, the insurance company then has the duty to show that what that they're really alleging is what happened, which is the fraud, and they have to come forward and show that? Is it, and conclusively, is that your position?
Yes, that's exactly right. That is very well stated.
Counsel, can you point to us, other than paragraph 120, 171 and 173 in the JAR complaint, mm-hmm. other points where it says that they make the allegation that they mishandled the soils?
Sure. The mishandling soils is really my way of summarizing what they say. Do you want in JAR or just the other complaints?
Give me your best paragraphs.
Okay. So in JAR, I was looking at 73 and 171, and it. Again, we're not looking at whether these allegations are pervasive. That's not the standard.
Okay. I understand.
Paragraph 64 of Bayview alleges that Tetra Tech, quote, remediated radioactive material in soil improperly, resulting in potentially radioactively contaminated soil being used as backfill for trenches at the shipyard. Paragraph 131, Tetra Tech is liable and responsible for engaging in conduct that resulted in digging and excavation of the soil, releasing toxic substances and toxic materials, including radionuclides, and plaintiffs were exposed to radiation-related injury as a result of Tetra Tech's negligent conduct. Abby, paragraph 25 is where I would look. I'm running out of time, but paragraph 25 is where I would look, where they say Tetra Tech mishandled soil around where they were working and they were exposed to contaminants.
We'll put your time full time for rebuttal, but just before you sit down, what is the status of these lawsuits? Some of them have been settled.
All three of these lawsuits have settled.
All three have now settled. Okay.
They have.
Okay, we'll put 5 minutes on the clock when you come back. Thank you.
I appreciate that.
May it please the court. My name is Elliot Strader on behalf of AIG Specialty Insurance Company. The appellee in this matter, it's a privilege to be here. Subject to questions as they come, I'd like to start with the duty to defend generally and move on to the policy's insuring agreement and then take the policy's exclusions. Although there seems to be some debate, the duty to defend under California law is not a mystery. It's based on the terms of the policy and two possible things, the allegations in the complaint and the facts known to the insurance company when it's tendered. The insurance company has to make that decision at the inception of the lawsuit. And so
when it was tendered, is there in the record what was tendered that supported the insurance company's position that the potential was not there?
That part I'm
very interested in.
Certainly. So on this record, all that we have are the allegations. There's no extra fact that was provided, not when it was tendered, not even on summary judgment. And let me contrast that with Gray, which I think sheds light on this whole confusion. So when Gray is decided, and you can look at the opinion, and what it says at the outset of the opinion is, when this was tendered to the insurance company, Dr. Gray said, I know this looks bad, but I was acting in self-defense. And what he says is the assailant, there was a near collision, and he approaches Dr. Gray's vehicle with menacing eyes and ripped open his car door and said, I felt fear for my life, and I acted in self-defense. And so the question arose, the seminal case on, do you consider just the allegations or do you consider the facts that were presented to the insurer
at the time? In this case, we don't. The insurance company never received facts, like you're saying, occurred in the Gray case that was other than just denial, which is not enough. They actually, the insured came forward and said, this is what happened. And we don't have that here.
Yes, sure.
So, for example, with respect to the negligence claims, we don't have at this early stage that the insured came forward and said, oh, by the way, other than denying, which they did, of course, that this is what really happened, right? You
Correct.
Don't have, the insurance company never received that as the insurance company received in Gray. And that's the difference?
That is a key difference because of the universe that we're looking at. In virtually every case that they rely on, there is some extrinsic fact provided to the insurance company that says, I know what this says, but here's what happened, and that's what happened in Gray. And so that's the point of we cannot let the plaintiff be the sole arbiter of coverage because the insurance company knew these additional facts. That is not here. To your point, all we have on summary judgment is we deny that. And we've cited to the Allgreen case. We've cited to the Hen Tooth Ranch case, which was affirmed by this court. And we have Montrose to guide us that says in this context, particularly on summary judgment, it's not enough to just deny the allegations without adducing some proof of what's going on.
But doesn't the insurance company, so in the Gray case, yes, the insured came forward with something. But doesn't the insurance company have an obligation to take a look and see, is there anything, these are fraud allegations, the allegations are substantial and they're serious and they're terrible. So does the insurance company have an obligation, though, other than the denial, to see, particularly when there's an allegation of negligence, to go and independently make that determination? Because the insurance company generally, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, coverage is usually there. So what did the insurance company do in this case?
So what California law says is the insurance company's analysis on the duty to defend is complete by reviewing the policy and the allegations in the lawsuit. If there are additional facts submitted.
Well, for example, let's say you know it's been denied. And the insured, so wouldn't you go to the insured and say, well, what about this allegation of negligence? What do you have there that would persuade the insurance company to accept the duty to defend?
So let me say this. First, the denials only came on summary judgment. Those were submitted as part of the summary judgment. There were no answers submitted. There was no denials. There was no other additional facts.
In the complaint? I thought I saw in the complaint there were denials.
So the answer to the complaint was submitted in response to the summary judgment. And what we're saying is the mere denial, according to Allgreen, according to Henstooth, according to Montrose, isn't sufficient. But let me move on to negligence.
And they didn't allege any facts. But by the way, this is the negligence we're talking about.
Certainly. And let's talk about negligence, right? And so the insuring agreement is loss because of bodily injury, property damage, or environmental damage resulting from unexpected, unintended pollution conditions. So what they've come back, and we've heard this mislabeled, and Judge Orrick took painstaking detail to create a chart of every sort of soundbite and then put it into context. And he did that in his order at the record side is 22 to 26. And he went through all of those specific allegations, just like we've done in our brief. So they're left with these negligence causes of action. And that misses the point entirely.
Why? Because you're basically saying, well, that's not enough to establish potential. Why?
Correct. For two reasons. One, as we explained in Quan and as the district court detailed, there are certain conduct that does not lend itself to an unexpected result. And the classic example is sexual assault, right? That's not an act in and of itself that leads to an unexpected result. And it's the nature of the conduct itself that disqualifies it from being that type of act. Fraud in this case, and what we're talking about, the pollution conditions are, they were hired to go out and test and remediate the site. They falsified the test and did not remediate the site, which led to the conditions of knowingly contaminated dirt in the ground and dirt that they intentionally moved elsewhere on site. Those are the pollution conditions. And so what Montrose explains, so we have the conduct itself. That's not the type of conduct that leads to an unexpected result. And what Montrose says is the reason we don't just look at whether it's negligence or an intentional tort is the elements of negligence and intentional torts don't exactly line up with the policy. And so by that I mean the difference between a negligent act, the finding of negligence, and an intentional tort is the extent to which you intended the harm. Here, bodily injury, property damage, environmental damage.
But maybe, but if you look at the complaint itself for negligence, it seems to me that at least in the negligence claim, the plaintiff is not going to go forward and say, or doesn't have to establish fraud. They just have to show that they violated the law by mishandling. That's what they're arguing. Why isn't, and that's a claim, doesn't it exist independent of the fraud claim?
Absolutely, and that's why I'm focusing on, so it is entirely possible that had these gone to trial, Tetra Tech would have been found in negligence, meaning they didn't intend the harm to the officers in the San Francisco Police Department. They didn't intend to harm children outside the neighborhood in Bayview. But all of the facts, the universe that we have, are that they fully expected the pollution conditions that led to the harm.
So let me ask you, this is a lesser included. So if they're not, the complaint can be read not just as fraud, not just everything that is alleged, whether it's true or not, it's only alleged, is that the plaintiff is also looking for the alternative without proving that there are all of the allegations of fraud, that this was intentional, that it was a very serious situation. Just that they, based upon the allegations, they committed a crime they committed negligence by not doing what they were supposed to do with the chemicals. And so, at least with respect to that, on the issue of negligence, why isn't there an obligation?
So again, the negligence cause of action, right? What distinguishes that from fraud, let's say, is the intent to cause the harm. That does not have anything necessarily to do with our policy language.
Maybe the plaintiff intends to prove that not just fraud, which is in the complaint, but that it was negligent. There's facts they intend to go forward and establish independent of the fraud. We can show negligence. So I'm asking, did the insurance company kind of explore that as a possibility, at least with respect to the negligence claim? Was there a possibility that the insurance company had an obligation?
I would put it this way. Again, the universe is important. The allegations are that they expected, if not intended, the pollution conditions, even if they didn't necessarily intend the harm. So there is a possibility, right? And so what we're saying is there are no facts. There is no conduct alleged that would lead to an unexpected result on these facts. And let me contrast it with Abby, and maybe this will help make the point. So of the three lawsuits, Abby does allege a cause of action that is completely negligent conduct. And what we've said is, it almost illustrates the point. What Abby plaintiffs allege, these are the San Francisco police officers, is that in 1996, before this remediation began, they undertook an analysis of Building 606. Because before putting the police officers in that building, they wanted to know, was this building used for radiological contamination? And what Tetra Tech came back with, according to the allegations, is no, this building's safe. Because they performed a test and determined, looked at historical records, rather, and determined this building was not used. This was a safe building.
Let me ask you this. Are you saying that when, based upon the allegations that are fraud, essentially, that there's no possibility, alternatively, that the jury could return a verdict in favor of the plaintiffs for negligence? In other words, based upon the allegations, that it wasn't intentional, that it was, they made a mistake, that some of them at least mistakenly did this with no fraudulent intent. Isn't that enough?
So I don't think that there's a possibility, based on the conduct alleged, that there is any pollution condition that is unexpected or unintended now because of that, because there's no other evidence of information provided to the insurance company. All that we have are the denials and the statements in the briefing that what if Tetra Tech thought the soil was clean? But that's not an allegation or any fact that was provided to the insurance company.
So this is an exclusion, so you have the burden.
Absolutely.
And the standard is high for that burden.
Absolutely. And so let me turn to the exclusion. So far, I've been discussing the insuring agreement and the unexpected and unintended nature of the pollution conditions. Turning to the exclusions, the analysis is different. And let me, some of this confusion, broadly speaking, there's a couple of different types of exclusions. One that on their face only applied to indemnity as a CGL, a commercial general liability, is an example. There's not really a defined insuring agreement. It says this policy applies to anything this applies to. And so you have to go to the exclusions that defines the coverage. In contrast to the standard commercial general liability, this is a sophisticated pollution policy that has a defined insuring agreement, and the exclusions themselves apply to claims. Not indemnity only, claims. Demands that allege liability arising out of, in the case of exclusion A, fraudulent, criminal, intentionally wrongdoing. So it applies to the alleged liability. And so when we turn to the exclusions, had they come within the insuring agreement? Absolutely. Our burden is to conclusively prove that an exclusion applies. But in the nature of our policy, this is why it's black and white. Because our policy excludes the claim. We don't have to wait for a determination about what happened. The intent, right, is to take it out of this ambiguity. We don't have to come forward and say, Tetra Tech, here's all the evidence at the outset of the case that we just got the tender for actually committed fraud.
I mean, the irony a little bit here is that now we have these are very sophisticated complaints with a lot of allegations, but a lot of insurance coverage cases involving smaller dollars, it's a, you know, 5-page complaint saying there was a car accident, you were negligent, and an insurer looks at that, and there's really no basis to deny coverage, and you know, at least initially, and so you're off to the races defending that. And so it seems that here, if the plaintiffs had just simply said, you know, there was a site, you failed to clean it up, this has caused harm to me, you owe me money, probably wouldn't have some of these same arguments that you're making.
You're absolutely right, Your Honor. This is a unique situation where it's not the throw-in intentionality. This is detailed over 180 pages of operative complaints, a fraudulent scheme that was undertaken for over a decade that resulted in the loss of hundreds of millions of dollars in exposure to a large group and diverse group of people. That is very unique. And in this situation, where there's no conduct alleged that has an unexpected result, and where the claim itself is absolutely that they intended it, and there's no other exception except for the allegations in Abbey about the negligent misrepresentation. Had that been during our policy period, and had that led to actual pollution conditions, that would have been covered.
So
let me. It didn't happen.
So on the exclusion, it says unexpected, unintended from the standpoint, which is prospective, of the insured. And so I think based upon the facts that are alleged, from the perspective of the insured, when you bring in all the allegations of what the employees did fraudulently, that unexpected is, and I didn't see anything about in the answer denying any kind of agency. That has not come up. In other words, that they acted on their frolic and detour and the company's not liable. That's not a issue, right? So that whatever happened, the facts would show from the perspective of Tetra, the company, that they should have known, right? From their perspective, it was unintended, right?
Absolutely, and I'd make one clarification. So the unexpected and unintended nature of the pollution condition is in the insuring agreement itself, not in an exclusion. And the facts are here not just they should have known, but that by falsifying the data and not actually performing the cleanup and then billing the government for that and then moving the dirt around the site, they knew it. There was no other way for them not to know it. And to the point about the pervasiveness of the fraud, it's everybody at every level, including some allegations that the CFO knew back in 2003. It is pervasive. Again, that's another unique nature that you don't always find in complaints. Look like you're about to say something. No. So turning to Exclusion J for the minute that I have left, an Exclusion J is unlike the others. It applies only to JAR. And it wasn't brought up, but for JAR specifically, and this is important, that most of the claims that the government alleged for years, because how this unfolded was a QTAM action where they intervened on fraudulent claims and submissions. Then they added a claim under CERCLA. That is the only claim at issue in JAR is the CERCLA claim. And what the government said is because of the pervasiveness of the fraud, and it turned out to be, according to the government, 97% of all the data and all the work that Tetra Tech had done at the site for these many years had to be redone at significant cost to the government. Exclusion J expressly excludes, right, claims, demands alleging liability arising out of the cost to repair, replace faulty remediation. It is squarely on point, and JAR stands alone in that it has its own exclusion specific to the CERCLA cause of action that I don't want to get lost in these concepts of the insuring agreement and the negligence. And I believe that's my time, unless there's any further questions.
Okay, Mr. Schrader, thank you.
Thank you.
So AIG's proffered interpretation, they're really turning the duty to defend on its head. They're requiring Tetra Tech to establish at the duty to defend stage that a negligence theory will prevail. That is not the duty to defend standard under California law. I want to address Gray. Gray was not an extrinsic evidence case. If you read Gray, the question before the court that the court answered was whether the complaint presented the possibility of coverage. And Gray answered that question in the affirmative. AIG talks about extrinsic evidence and Montrose. Extrinsic evidence, it can create a duty to defend or it can defeat a duty to defend. But extrinsic evidence is evaluated under the same standard as allegations. That extrinsic evidence must conclusively show that there is no pathway to coverage. That's the same standard that allegations are evaluated under. Because there's no extrinsic evidence in this case, you don't get to treat allegations as established fact. And that's what AIG has done, and that's what the district court has done. AIG has stood up here and said Tetra Tech for years They said something about this fraudulent scheme as if it were proven. These are allegations. These are not proven facts. You have to look beyond the allegations, and you have to look at what potential liability is created by this lawsuit.
So the counsel for the insurance company said, though, with respect to Gray, that the insurance company didn't just have a denial, but the insured came forward and said, this is what really happened. And this was a sexual abuse case, so perhaps those fall into a category where there's allegations, there's denials. Why isn't that a little different here? Because the insured didn't come forward with anything to say, no, this didn't. Here's the evidence that we'd offer to show a defense.
Yeah, so in Gray, the only extrinsic evidence really that the court mentions is that the insured told his insurance company, I didn't do this, basically, which is what every defendant says, because obviously the allegations are disputed. But that wasn't part of Gray's analysis. Gray was looking at the four corners of the pleading. Gray looked at the allegation of willful, malicious, brutal, and intentional assault. That's what the complaint said there. And Gray said, even though the complaint alleges intentional assault, there is a potential for covered liability in this case because the insured could show I was acting in self-defense. That's no different than here. AIG didn't ask us for, you know, whether we denied the allegations. I think every insurance company should assume that their insured denies the allegations, and obviously we have the answers where we deny the allegations. I do want to discuss really quickly, you brought up agency, and I think you're talking about these the two employees who pleaded guilty, Hubbard and Wolf. So I do want to bring those up. So they pled guilty to instances of switching soils in 2012. Tetra Tech does deny agency and that they knew or were responsible for these employees' acts. But the timing is really the issue there. Those occurred in 2012. These plaintiffs allege that their damages began in the early 2000s, 2002, 2003. And AIG's policies only provide coverage from 2002 to 2006. So we're looking at harm that was caused in that time period. That's what's covered under AIG's policies. So those guilty pleas in 2012, they're outside the coverage period. And those two employees, they're not insured under the policy. The policy covers a pollution liability that was unexpected and unintended from the standpoint of the insured. The insured is Tetra Tech. It's not Rolf. It's not Hubbard. It's not those rogue employees. And also there's an innocent insured exception to exclusion A, the fraud exclusion, that says any insured who did not participate in the fraud, that exclusion does not apply to them. Tetra Tech is the insured, not those two employees. I am out of time, unless you have any other questions. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Odia, thank you very much. Mr. Strader, thank you. Thank you both for the briefing and argument. This matter is submitted.